would you like to close multifamily investment deals? Alec New will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Alec is he's a multifamily real estate investment professional with over $500 million in transaction volume, combining large-scale brokerage experience with boutique development execution. And he currently serves as a director at Seacrest Advisors, where he co-leads the firm's multifamily investment sales practice in Florida, advising private capital clients on acquisitions, dispositions, and strategic opportunities across the Southeast. So, Alec, tell us about how can property investors close multifamily investment deals? What is your blueprint of how someone could get started?
Property Wealth Strategies podcast with Lily Patrashko shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Yeah, great question, Lily. So a little bit of a asterisk to the Seacrest Advisors. That's one of my companies. Another one is New Real Estate Group, which I'm more involved in, which is a development and construction company here in the Midwest in Indianapolis. But as far as call it a new investor getting into the market and dipping their toe into the world of real estate investing, the first, I would say, way of doing that is to identify a market that you'd like to be in. Typically, what I've found is most investors feel most comfortable investing in their backyard. So start there, talk to first some of the realtors within the market, as well as maybe some lenders, so you can figure out more of what you're able to qualify from a purchase price standpoint, and then moving from it from there.
Thank you. If you had to go from zero to your first $10 million multifamily deal today, what exact steps would you take?
It's a good question. I'd say the first step I would take is, because I know I can't do a $10 million deal alone, I would talk to friends, family, high net worth capital partners, and start working through it deal by deal, and just talking to investment brokers or commercial real estate brokers, and getting on their deal flow and their deal pipeline to learn about the deals they've got on or off market, and then going about it that way.
Thank you. Tell us about your journey of how you started closing multifamily investment deals.
So my journey started back during COVID in 2020. I just graduated from college and I moved from Indianapolis down to Florida, actually, and started as a broker selling in what's called the private capital airspace, $5 to $25 million multifamily investment properties along the west coast of Florida, along the Gulf Coast. So from there, I had built relationships with other real estate owners and deal makers in the Florida market. And from that, I left that position to go back to Indianapolis and work for my family, and have since started to invest the capital that I made from selling multifamily properties now into the Indianapolis market and buying small residential properties throughout Indianapolis.
Thank you. What separates investors who analyze deals versus those who close them?
I think you hit it right there. It's the investors that are over-analyzing a deal or over-analyzing a cap rate or a cash-on-cash return, rather than looking at the fundamentals of the property itself. And what I mean by that, as far as the fundamentals, is if you're in a strong neighborhood, or if you're in a growing metro where there's good fundamentals from the job sector, meaning it's a diverse job sector, or you've got a healthy rental demographic in your backyard, knowing that the property that you're going to buy is going to have a good opportunity to be leased up and have a stable tenant for the long term, is when you're getting into the good fundamentals of a real estate ownership.
Thank you. Where are you actually finding high quality deals right now? Brokers, off market, or relationships? And if relationships, where are those kind of relationships? And how can someone start developing those kind of relationships for themselves?
I'd say the best deals are found through relationships, whether it's off market or on market, through brokers who are active within the market of where you're looking to invest. Those same brokers also have off market access through the owners that they have conversations with throughout the year. So I'd say it comes down to having relationships from a few different aspects: brokers, owners in the market, and lenders or other realtors out there that have access to a deal pipeline to be able to build your own deal pipeline. And after you're able to do that, then it's just about the access you've got to capital and operations-wise to where you can really start to expand.
Thank you. How does a brand new person, especially young looking, how do they start to build that credibility? Because, for example, I'm in the property space as well. Like, I've been doing property management for 14 years. And what I found is, I mean, I was doing just property management and I was not building any relationships within that. Like, I was not looking to expand the portfolio because I was working for someone, okay? But once I got into publishing and I started helping authors that were property investors, I kind of started to develop that side. And what I've noticed is that oftentimes there were people that had multimillion dollar property deals, but perhaps in the very beginning, they wouldn't trust me with it. Like, they wouldn't like say, oh yeah, maybe they would tell me about it, but they didn't think I could help. Although for me, it was like obvious, of course I can help, because like I'm getting super connected. Like, you don't even know like how connected I am. Okay. But I find that sometimes people's perception of you can be very distorted in terms of what they think you can do. And the other thing I found as a problem was that I had a lot more property deals that were kind of coming to me versus property investors that had the money to actually buy those deals. So, like, how do you get that kind of, how do you manage this initial lack of credibility, lack of trust as a youngish kind of person that is kind of getting into the market?
Yeah, I would say it's the conveyance of how you articulate or how you have developed that relationship, whether it's with friend or family or business partner, business relationship. I would say it comes down to you not being afraid to put yourself out there and offer your value to that friend, to that family, to that other person, business partner, whoever it may be, to really just putting yourself out there. I can tell you, building here now in Indianapolis, new construction, mostly 2 and 4 unit properties, as well as build-to-rent communities. I haven't sold a single property, which we've sold over $100 million worth of inventory just within the past 18 to 20 months. I haven't sold a single one of those properties, so I have friends that can afford to buy those properties. Most of those have came through referral or through relationships I've got at a professional level. So to be able to develop a relationship with the close friends or family you've got, I think it really comes down to you putting yourself out there and offering that value that you know you can provide, whether it's on the property management landscape or if it's on the investor landscape.
Thank you. What's your repeatable system for getting deal flow consistently? Because I think, for example, when you're trying to get residential properties, I think the system must be a little bit different versus getting like $100 million kind of multifamily deals. Surely there must be like a little bit of a difference of where you would go to make this happen, or would you say no? Actually, you know, some people tend to have like both, or how do you go about it?
I think it would be first establishing your need. So if you're looking at, I would call it that smaller deal level would be like the private capital side. Or if you're talking 50 million plus transactions, you're talking then an institutional level. So really, to answer your question, I think it comes down to the relationship that you're looking to create, whether it's at an institutional level or at a private capital level. There's brokers, there's realtors, there's contacts that you can reach out to on both fronts to find deals of both variety.
Thank you. For those people that have like a much larger portfolio of deals versus investors that actually have money to buy those deals, where would you say they should go to kind of cultivate those kind of relationships with investors with cash ready to invest in, you know, with hundreds of millions of dollars?
I would say you go to where the deals would be. Whether that's on the commercial multifamily side, you go to conferences or events like NAIOP, National Industrial and Office Platform, or you go to NMHC, which is National Multi-Housing Council, which specializes in multifamily. There's deal makers at those conferences that you can talk to and start to create relationships with from an owner-operator standpoint, as well as from a brokerage, a deal provider standpoint. So first establishing the niche that you want to be in.
Thank you. And how do you build broker relationships so you see deals before they hit the market?
I would say it just comes down to routine touch and base. Hey, Willie, I'm here. I'm actively looking for deals. I'm looking to buy something here in the market, especially when you're brand new. Putting yourself out there and not being afraid to like slip up on your words or not know what you're talking about. Putting yourself out there and just saying, hey, I'm new to this. I'm looking for guidance. I want to figure out how to do it. You'll come across people that are going to be standoffish or not open to providing help or value to you as you're getting into the space. You'll also come across people that are happy to take you by the arm or take you by the wing and show you the ropes and try and teach you the ropes and give you that guidance to lead you to where you want to go.
Thank you. I've had in my experience some people that like literally wrote me off and even wrote me off when I was like actively trying to send them deals or investors, because I think that a lot of people have a very short kind of like attention span, a very short patience as well. So let's say if I introduce you, let's say two or three people that don't pan out, you're thinking, okay, all of Lily's network is useless because these two didn't invest or whatever, right? So I'm wondering, like, how do you create that kind of credibility and trust and whatever else you think needs to happen so that that kind of thing doesn't happen? So you're not like written off, even if you're trying really hard to kind of help other people in your network.
Yeah, I would say that it comes to how you're measuring success. If you're measuring success by being rejected from one conversation and taking that as the pool of the conversations you could be having over that next, call it week or 30 days, and you're just writing off all of those conversations, meaning you're not going to even put yourself out there to have those other conversations, I think that's the kind of the principle you've got to take to applying it to the other. Say you've got 30 conversations throughout the month, one conversation right at the beginning, you got wrote off. Well, you've still got 29 other opportunities to find that one person who's not going to write you off, who's going to help you to learn and to guide you to get into the goal where you want to go.
Thank you. Are you saying don't get discouraged by the rejections that you get and simply keep going, because at some point numbers are gonna be eventually if you work hard enough and you're persevering enough?
Yep, absolutely. It's a numbers game at the end of the day. So
thank you. What's your quick initial filter to decide if a deal is worth looking at?
I would say my first filter is always location. You can't replace the location or move the property from where it's at. So if you're looking at location, there's strong demographics within your backyard. There's a good chance that that deal that I'm looking at is going to move to the next step of, okay, does it cash flow to where I'm looking for it to cash flow? Is it going to be something I'm buying and holding for 2 years or 3 years, or is this something, an asset that I'm going to buy and hold for like my long-term portfolio?
Thank you. What are the 3 to 5 numbers you look at first before going deep?
I would say I don't look at numbers at all before going deep. I look at, again, I look at the location of the property. I map out and try and figure out, okay, well, I'm providing housing. Who's my ideal tenant going to be? Is it going to be a blue collar worker, a white collar worker? Is it going to be a student? Is it going to be a young family? Who might my tenant be? And then I'm trying to figure out from there, okay, is that tenant someone that's going to be there long term? Is it going to be a stable investment? Meaning, am I going to get a stable cash flow month over month, year over year? And then from there, yeah, I work into the numbers. I reach out to my financing, figure out what kind of debt would be accessible. And then from there, I'll back into, okay, what are rents looking like at the property? Or where can rents go at the property in the future versus what they're at now to add value to it over that 1, 2, 3, 10 years or whatever it might be. And then from there, I'm looking at cash on cash return and so on and so forth.
Thank you. How do you stress test a deal to make sure it survives worst case scenarios?
I look at a deal from three different angles. One would be best case scenario, call it center scenario. Okay, great. If things go good and things go bad, I'm kind of at a break-even point. And then I also stress test it with worst case scenario. So if rents go down 5, 10%, if vacancy goes up 5%, if my operating expenses are going from, say, 35% to 50%, what does my cash flow look like? Am I still covering my mortgage? Am I still paying myself back? And if I've got capital partners on the deal with me, am I still able to deliver a return to them that would be what we initially discussed when we had sourced and bought the deal?
Thank you. What's a red flag that immediately kills a deal for you?
Bad location. I'd say if there's a deal in a location where I don't feel comfortable, I'm not going to move forward with it. If I think the deal is overpriced, meaning the deal is priced based upon future value, or the deal is priced on skinny expenses, meaning just the numbers are really inflated, or if what the deal is selling at from a cap rate standpoint isn't what the current trading market cap is, I won't move forward with it.
Thank you. What are your 10 commandments for closing multifamily investment deals? What are the top lessons you have learned whilst doing so?
I don't know that I've got 10 commandments. I would say probably my one commandment would be the ability to pivot. So back when I got into real estate, interest rates were at 2 and 3%. The accessibility to cheap debt was there really from 2016 until 2021. And it was really easy to make sense of properties. It was really easy to buy properties. It was really easy to get that great return to sell the deal to capital partners. And then when interest rates went up at the back half of 2021, a lot of debt was obviously twice as expensive, three times as expensive as it previously was. So being more diligent in underwriting, being more understanding and having that stress test of a deal or a worst case scenario was really where I developed that one commandment, call it, which was the ability to pivot and not get tied down to one specific deal.
Thank you. How do you structure deals between $1 to $50 million to attract investors?
It's a good question. I'd say it's not really the deal, it's more the relationship that you've got with that, call it a partner, a capital partner. Their ability and the relationship that you build with them to have the trust in you to deliver the results that you're promising on the forefront. Because I'd love to always, every deal, I don't want to overpromise and under deliver. I want to underpromise and over deliver, because that's going to create that trust and that strong relationship for future business.
Thank you. What's your approach to raising capital efficiently without wasting time? Because I think some people, some investors will eventually give you money, but giving you money quickly when you need it, that is even better. So how do you make this happen?
I would say always be raising capital. Always be talking to capital partners, high net worth individuals, family offices, whoever you're sourcing capital from. Always be building those relationships throughout the year, whether it's going to lunch or going golfing or just getting together for coffee or whatnot. Always be building that relationship. So when the time does come, when you do have a deal that surfaces that you think, oh, this would be a great opportunity for me and my partners to make money from it, the relationship's there, the relationship's already built, that it makes that quick access to money that much easier.
Thank you. What do sophisticated investors look for before committing capital? It's my opinion that investors look at little promises that you keep, like being on time, and lots of other little things they observe about you. And those little tiny things tell them everything they need to know about you as a person. And then, of course, they will, you know, take a bit of extra time to decide about you and see if their opinion was right. But do you agree about that? Or do they look for something else before committing capital to your business?
What I've found is being of your word. So being honest, having integrity in business, and never cutting someone off at the knees over chasing a dollar, really, which comes back to the honesty standpoint. So being of your word and being of what you had promised, whether it's on a 100-page contract or it's a handshake agreement, being truthful and fruitful with your word and what you had said that you were going to deliver upon, which comes down to being having good communication or over communicating at certain issues that have arisen and making them aware of, oh, hey, well, we're having issues leasing this month, or, oh, construction, say on a new build project, has gone over schedule. We're not going to be able to deliver the project to the market for another 3 months or whatever it might be. Just being honest and transparent and open, because typically when that's communicated on the forefront, it's a lot easier or a lot healthier of a relationship to not have to go back and communicate it on the back end. And then they're coming back and saying, oh, well, you found out about this 3 months ago. Why am I just hearing about it now?
Thank you. Where do most deals fall apart in the closing phase? Is it the small print in the contract, or is it something else that investors will be put off by?
I would say it's probably on the front end of things. If what's gone on recently with deals being repriced by lenders, or debt just not making sense, or debt getting repriced, has been a bit of an issue.
Thank you. How do you negotiate price and terms in a competitive market?
I'd say by first knowing where the market's at. So what I mean by that is being able to negotiate competitive terms. You've got to know what your competitors, your other buyers that are bidding on these deals, are offering at, whether it's from a due diligence standpoint or a closing timeline or an earnest money perspective. Being able to convey your offer as well as your ability to close, not just from a purchase price standpoint, but more so from a ability to close standpoint.
Thank you. What's one tactic that helped you win deals consistently? And I'm talking, was there any out of the box tactic? Like, for example, for some people, they're just like very calm, and that appeals to some people, right? For others, it's like their energy that is like so attractive to investors, aside from all the other due diligence things that, you know, that they meet in the tick box. Is there anything that you feel has worked in your favor when it comes to helping you win deals consistently?
So what's helped me win deals consistently has been the relationships that I've been creating since I've gotten into the business. So you're always planting seeds, is what I like to say. Those seeds may not harvest for 3 months, they may not harvest for 5 years. So I've had clients call me from when I was in the brokerage business to brokers or owners that have called me now being in the owner operator business, saying, "Hey, I've got this deal. This is what's going on. Do you think you would be interested in buying it or taking it off of my hands?" So just always be planting seeds and harvesting relationships.
Thank you. What's one personality trait that has worked in your favor to help you win deals consistently? For me, for example, like I'm very funny, okay, and I can build rapport very quickly with people. And I think I really deeply care about people. And it's not to get something. It's because I'm always thinking about how can I add value to someone. And I think people can read through that because I can't do poker, I can't do this poker face, you know, like people can read my exact intentions. So I could never try. I mean, even if I tried to hide, I don't think it would work very well.
Yeah.
So like, what's one personality trait that kind of works in your favor when you're connecting to these investors, to these high profile and very influential and very wealthy investors?
I would say I'm very blunt and honest. That typically, I'd say for the most part, is perceived pretty well. And being blunt and honest to the point, not adding a lot of fluff. Like going back to what I had said earlier, if there's an issue with like a projected date, whether it's from a leasing standpoint or whether it's from like a closing standpoint on a deal that's going to be closing in the next 30 days, just calling and telling them and speaking to them about what that issue may be or what that achievement might be. Just having the open dialogue, I've found has been fruitful in building the relationship and just having honesty from both ends, my end as well as from that capital partner's end.
Thank you. Losing money on property deals is common. And I'm wondering, how do you manage those investor relationships once, let's say you have and I'm not sure if you are investing money for people, but let's say if some investors invested some money into your deals and then let's say you lost money on that, like how do you manage that kind of relationship so that you are still able to get more investment from the same investors? Because I think some investors are, you know, open to the idea that occasionally you can lose, but your next deal could be a good one. So is there any way to recover that kind of investor's confidence, or it's like a done deal, that person will never give you any money?
No, I would say it comes back to being having open communication and open dialogue about what the true circumstance might be. Being blunt and what the actual situation was, owning up to it and taking accountability from it or for it as you're the GP or the individual running the deal. So just being open and honest, I would say, is the best route you can go.
Thank you. Once you close on a deal, what are your first 90-day priorities to increase value, for example, on a multifamily investment deal?
To increase value, I'd say it comes down to it's very deal specific. So every deal going in, there's a different business plan for it, whether it's a deal that's underpriced to the market. Meaning there's rents that we can raise to recoup that achievable value, or it's just from an operational standpoint, meaning there's a higher level of vacancy on the property, or the current property manager isn't performing to what the market vacancy is, or whatever it might be. to increase that.
Thank you. Are you able to tell us some of your case studies of either multifamily investment deals that you have done that were successful that you can share? Or if not, perhaps some of your current deals that you're working on that investors can contribute to?
Yeah, I would say there was one recently back in December. It was a right around a $4-5 million deal that I had done down in Florida. And there was an issue talking about quick capital. There is, we lost a capital investor. It was probably, I don't know, $200,000 or $300,000 capital contribution. That investor backed out last minute. So that was a deal that I had done where I had to scramble and figure out a way to put the capital together and source it to get the deal closed in a less than 2 week timeline.
Thank you. What's the biggest execution mistake that kills returns on a deal?
I would say being overly aggressive with underwriting, meaning being overly aggressive on your rental assumptions or on what your perceived value is on, say, like expenses or whatnot.
Thank you. What's the biggest mistake new multifamily investors make?
I would say the biggest mistake they probably make is just not getting into the market or overanalyzing a deal and not getting into the market. So your first deal, you're probably not going to make the money you thought you were going to make on it. So there was a deal that I had done that's now becoming a property that I can start to operate. There was a deal I had done probably 2 years ago. I had bought a piece of land that I found out was in a historical society. And that piece of land sat unused. I wasn't able to build on it for that point in time. And I had to meet with the city, had to meet with that landowners, or not that landowners, but I had to meet with the historical community where that land sat before I was able to build on it. So I wasn't able to build the property. I wasn't able to get rental returns and whatnot.
I cannot hear.
Not for over 2 years to where I'm just paying. Oh, you can't?
It's okay.
Better?
I can hear now. It's okay. Yeah. How do you protect yourself from the downside risk in today's market?
I'd say, again, it's coming back to underwriting, not being overly aggressive, being conservative, having that stress test on every deal that I'm looking at.
Thank you. What's a deal you walked away from and why?
I'd say most recently, a deal I've walked away from has been from deals that are just overpriced right now. They're trading lower than what the market cap rate is or what the market value is. Trading higher than what the market value is, which there's a lot of deals out there right now. So being very selective in the market that we're currently in is going to be probably the biggest challenge.
Thank you. How does someone go from investing in smaller deals to investing in $20 to $50 million transactions? How does someone grow to a much higher level?
I would say growing your relationships, everyone starts somewhere. So whether you're starting from a single family background or a small multifamily background to then scaling and building your Rolodex to be able to buy $25 or $50 million deals, you just gotta start.
Thank you. What's the best way to build a power team to support you in delivering on multifamily investment deals?
How do you mean build a power team?
I mean, like all the different people that you will need to make this happen. Like I'm talking, I know, lawyer, the agent, the handyman, the property manager, the whoever else you're going to need.
I would say finding a mentor. Find a mentor that's already plugged into that network, especially if you're just starting out. You're not going to have all of those relationships. but someone that's able to mentor you and be a guide in that space and already has that, I call it a deal team, who's got a lenders or already has capital partners or property managers, whatever it may be, power team wise, to get you to that next step of where you need to go.
If someone has 50K to 100K US dollars, how should they start investing into multifamily investment deals?
I would say find a deal that's undervalued. If they've got 50 to 100K, find a deal that's undervalued and determine if they want to hold the property long term for cash flow, or if they're looking to hold the property for appreciation and then building on that property, meaning building on that property, the property appreciates in value to where they can access that grown equity in the property and move it on, or pull it out through a refinance and put it into your next deal.
Thank you. What's the most valuable lesson that you learned whilst closing multifamily investment deals?
I would say the most valuable lesson has been to really just start. So I started investing probably about 2 years ago now, and the lessons I've learned from, not just from like a deal sourcing standpoint, but also from an operation standpoint of, it's great to have all these assumptions on what your expenses might be going in, but the truth of the matter is those are just assumptions. Things are going to change on a weekly or daily or monthly basis, and the ability to pivot and not to have been overly aggressive on your purchase to where it comes back to bite you.
How does a property investor cope with failure? So let's say that they started their very first project and they lost money on that. And then how do they get the energy, the excitement, the motivation to believe in themselves again to invest in another project? Like, how did you kind of cope with your personal failures and how did you find that strength and energy? Especially if, let's say, you have, I don't know, a spouse or friends or your family that kind of says, oh, you're just a failure, or you're never gonna make it, and look at you, and this kind of thing.
I would say it would come down to having that long-term vision. Real estate's a long-term game. I plan to be in real estate and investing in real estate for the next 30, 40, 50 years. So understanding and having that mindset to not taking today's failure for a future result, because taking it in stride and then growing and gaining that knowledge from it is what's going to help you into the long term.
Thank you. And if someone wants to close their first multifamily deal in the next 12 months, what should they do starting tomorrow?
I would say reach out to someone you know, or maybe someone you don't know but you follow, whether it's on social media, whether it's you know from your community, or maybe it's someone that you know that they know someone. I'd say reach out, have an open dialogue, and then from that conversation, ask that individual that you just spent, I don't know, 30 minutes to an hour with, picking their brain with questions, ask them who else you may need to talk to. And then just branch out from there and continue to have conversation and open dialogue. And then once you feel like you're in a position, then take the action of buying that property or take the action of jumping in.
Thank you. Can you tell us a bit about the projects you're involved in right now, and can investors join in? And where can people connect with you and learn from your deals?
Yeah, so people can find us at newrealestategroup.com. It's NEU, not NI. So they can find us at newrealestategroup.com. They can call me personally. My cell phone's 765-525-2161. So if they're looking to invest with us, they can find us on the internet or find us by phone number. And I'm always open to having a conversation, whether it's in person or over a Zoom or Google Meet call like this, and helping them to get into investing in real estate and building long-term wealth.
Thank you.
follow me for more property wealth strategies.